This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. Yeah, I am back. It was one episode in between where I wasn't here, but Dylan was. And Dylan, you did a great show on the history of Sumo Palace, I learned on that show, because I always went with Sumo Hall.
You know, thank you so much for listening, by the way. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that little foray. The one who deserves the most credit by far is Dr. Jonathan Foy, who organized and set all this up. And thank you, Jonathan, for that. And obviously thank you, Fumi Saito, for coming in. Longtime journalist, commentator, podcaster in his own right on there. So we talked a lot about so many things. It wasn't just about Sumo Palace. So even if you think that you might see that and be like, history of a building. There's actually so much that we go to that centers around ostensibly Sumo Palace. But some of my favorite highlights of that show had to be when we were talking about the riot in 1987 with Beat Takeshi,
yes,
coming in to New Japan, which is a very fascinating story. And he did break my heart a little bit when he said that the UWF guys, they had to make a change because they weren't drawing on the TV stations, which he also worked at. So he would know this very firsthand. But I was not very happy to hear that, to be honest with you. But still, you cannot argue the facts. And we talked about Rick Martel as well on there. I loved them trying to get Hayabusa and Yoshiaki Fujiwara into the Observer Hall of Fame.
That was a good pod, yeah.
Yes. And it was all factual statements we were saying, by the way. Yeah. I will completely stand by that whole segment. But most importantly, it was just a lot of fun. Like I said, we had never even talked before, but by the end of it, I remember there was a part he was like, oh, well, we never met, but you're speaking my language or whatever on there.
Right.
So we were all very happy with it. And it was so cool to talk to him. One day we'll do another episode of that. One day, hopefully, you could come on with us too, Stringer. Why not? Exactly. You're welcome. Next time, I think if we do another episode with Fumi, one way or the other, I think that it'll be more like a modern version, because we actually talked a little bit about that, but I kind of cut it out at the end because it just didn't fit with the rest of stuff, to be honest with you. But he had great insight into stuff on a lot of different things that made me think about some stuff. Like, you know, I know you were talking about the Inoki stuff on there. Actually, I put Inoki's theme song as the opening. I never want to put our theme song on shows that you're not on, because to me, the Eastern Lariat, it has to be both of us. It can't just be one, in my opinion. So I always try to change it. Usually I have the Mirai Nikki theme, which has gratuitous German, which I always appreciate. That's like my little shout out to you, Stringer, when you're away.
I see. I got it. Okay.
Yes, but this time I picked Inoki, which is also a shout out to you. You're a renowned Inoki fan as well. I did end it on Hashimoto's theme as well. The reason is because those two guys to me represent Sumo Hall more than like anybody else. You know?
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah, just with the main events and all that. But it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the show. If you're a fan of historical stuff, and it's a lot different than mine and Striga's normal shows too, just because it was so – it's kind of like a conversation. Like I said, it's not even like an interview or anything like that. We just kind of talked about everything, and it was a lot of fun on there. But I did a lot of research about Sumo Hall. We learned that the building started – like the traces of it was like all the way back to 1833. So and there was different variations. The thing got burned down twice. It got taken over in World War II. It's a fascinating story of the building itself, but then there's so much that happened there that it was so much fun. So thank you for listening to anybody who did, and hopefully you enjoyed it. That's something I really love And like I said, the timing was interesting, but Jonathan really set that up together. One day, if we're on a break or something again, I'll try to do some other kind of weird show, like sideshow like that. Not like a weird show, but like, you know, just something special, a special type of show, like a historical episode and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun, and hopefully today's show, now that we're back with the regular version of the Eastern Lariat, me and Striga, America and Germany, teaming up once more for my favorite show, the Eastern Lariat.
Listen, there's a lot of guys that have been on this show. Like, I almost feel like that this show has a revolving door of guests now.
Yes.
in its history. So that was very cool. And on the topic of history, Dylan, there was a key difference between segments where we go back in history and with your show that you did with Fumi Saito, because he has been there for a lot of Sumo Hall's history in the last 40 years. He even went back to say that he had attended Sumo Hall when he was still a kid. So he was there for a lot of this key historic moments, whereas we just talk about it in hindsight, and he probably has forgotten more about Sumo Hall than we will ever learn about the building. So that was great to hear.
And, yes, it's also a very rare show as well where I end up talking less than my partner on there. Whether it's you, whether I'm on WH's show, even when I was on Kick Out, whatever show I'm on, I usually end up unwittingly taking it over in my own way, or not attempting to, but just kind of happens naturally. But with Fumi, finally I met my match, and I just was very happy to hear his insights for the exact reason you said, that he had the live experience. He worked with the networks. He worked with these people, the wrestlers themselves, you know, obviously talking to him, commentator. That's one thing I really wish we could have talked about more, is the All Japan Women's stuff that he did as a commentator, because I think that's so fascinating on his part. But I didn't want to make it about him. Like I said, we were just conversating, so to speak. But yes, I completely – that's a very rare edition of the show where I'm the secondary player on it in terms of speaking time.
Yes, so if you haven't listened to that, it is up on our free feed, the Sumo Hall special. And now we are back here with our regular scheduled episodes, but also, Dylan, with another set of shows that will take place in Sumo Hall. And it almost seems like that this year, running a double shot in Sumo Hall is the new cool thing to do in Japanese pro wrestling. DDT has done it with TJPW. Stardom has done it, and now Pro Wrestling Noah will also run a double shot in Sumo Hall this coming, actually not this coming weekend, the weekend thereafter, at the beginning of Golden Week on April 29 and on April 30. They got two cards with 10, respectively 11 matches on the card, and I just want to go through the cards, Dylan, and whenever you have something to say about the matches, just get in here, or we'll talk about it after I render the card.
Okay.
So the first one, a Majestic 2022, an Innovation. It has 10 matches. Ikuto Hidaka versus Kai Fujimura. Slex versus Yasutaka Yano. Kotaro Suzuki versus Yuya Susumu, who, by the way, now has left Pro Wrestling Freedoms and probably will be a regular contracted Noah wrestler going forward. Nosawa, Tejano Jr. and Super Crazy against Dasuke, Hajime Ohara and Shuji Kondo. The hair versus hair, and the loser gets his name stripped. Hao versus Neo. Seki Yoshioka versus Extreme Tiger. Noah versus Zebrats. Daisuke Harada, Alejandro and Yuta Miyawaki against Shun Skywalker, Espy Kendo and Hio. Of course, those three of Dragon Gate. There's a three-way match with a Dragon Bane, Alpha Wolf, and Ninja Mac. Junior Tag Team Title, Atsushi Kotoge and Yohei. The champions defend against Yoshinari Ogawa and Chris Ridgeway, who is back after over 2 years in Pro Wrestling Noah. Great for him. And in the main event for the GHC Junior Heavyweight Title, Ada defends against Hayata. So, yeah, the first card of Sumo Hall for Noah. What do you think?
So the gimmick of this, so to speak, is that it's like an all junior card for Noah, and Noah's the juniors take the center stage. That's the focus of the show, and they talked about this for months now. It's not like this just magically came up out of nowhere. This is something that's been announced for a while now, and you see a lot of the outside influence, especially, you know, in the undercard, but then they continue it throughout the entire show, really. They had so much to bring in, and they committed to making this a junior show, and I appreciate that, because it seems like there was a lot of logistics headaches, to be honest with you, because you're bringing in people from all over the place, Australia, Mexico, other companies, you got Ridgeway coming in. So you have a little bit of everything going on there. They had a couple of heavyweight guys like Tejano.
I just looked him up. As of right now, on his Cage Match profile, he stands at 220 pounds, so just on the edge of being a junior heavyweight or heavyweight.
Is Slex a junior?
Slex, I just looked him up. Apparently, yes.
Okay, so by the definition of the weight class, they have gotten in there, I guess you could say.
There.
But I think of Tejano more as a heavyweight, and he's going to be a lot bigger than these other guys in this match, if I'm being honest. Maybe him and Kondo could have something. But regardless, to me, a lot of these matches feel like a lots of step ones, you know, like for these new guys, when you need it to be the final step in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the only ones, you know, some of the matches that I'm looking forward to on this would be like the Howe and Neo match. I think they built that feud up really well. They had the great match in January to set that up. They've been on this interesting climb with Kongo, with people leaving, coming and going, which is true of every faction in NOAH, especially the juniors, where people just leave and go and all that stuff. But I like that they've at least built a true rivalry and have a definitive stipulation with this. It's going to be hair and name, not just the name. Okay. But a definitive big time stipulation.
I think it is a hair and name. On Purulov, we just have a name. But I think I've read that there's also the hair on the line. I'm going to try to verify that while you talk.
Okay. Well, the name is probably the one everybody cares about more anyway. This brings me back to the DDT angle where Sasaki tried to cut his own hair at the press conference. It was like, who even cares? It's going to grow back anyway. Why are we doing this?
It's just about the name, no.
Okay, well, the name's more important either way. That's my point. But I like that they built a faction. All the other matches, I think that, like, Harada and crew versus Zebrats, like, it's cool that they've had these interferences and run-ins and stuff like that to build up this match, but I just don't know what kind of stakes there are for this particular six-man match, other than it just being the novelty of it being Dragon Gate influenced. It could be good, though. The three-way match with Bane, Alpha Wolf, and Ninja Mac, that's obviously going to be a crazy spot fest on there. It's nice that they added Ninja Mac because, you know, Wolf and Bane, you would just expect them to kind of wrestle each other, which is what they did when they were in NOAH last. So having Ninja Mac in there might freshen things up a little bit on that end. But again, that's not a match that could wow everybody, seeing someone like Ninja Mac, who nobody on NOAH is really like. But it's not a match that feels overly important to me. And I think that's my main thing here. Like, besides the ring name match with Howe and Neo, none of these matches feel particularly important.
And the thing about it is, when I'm looking at the card and look at what has been built up and what hasn't, I have no idea why the match between Howe and Neo is the fifth match and is just in the mid-card.
And that's true. It's even below Yoshioka and Tiger.
Yeah, and it doesn't really make sense unless they plan to have an intermission after the match.
That would at least have some logic to it, I guess, kind of like main event, the first phase of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the semi-main event match will be a really good. It's great to see Ridgeway back. To be honest with you, I kind of expect them to win the titles in that match. That's the problem right there. Like, that's your reaction to everything on this show, is that it doesn't matter.
It really is.
Yeah. Besides the ring.
You could cut the first four matches and nobody would complain.
Yeah, I mean, they don't matter at all. But you know, the undercard, it is what it is. That's happened in many big shows before. I'm not going to hold that against them. You know, but you're right, though. At the end of the day, none of these matches really matter. I think the one match built up is the ring name match. And even the title matches, I think it's a terrible condemnation of their booking of the division that the titles are so meaningless at this point, because I remember there was a time where these would mean so much. Like, if they did a show like this, it would really be effective and it would have purpose and prestige and all of this stuff. And now these two title matches on the card, I mean, what are you going to do, though, at the end of the day? Like, the damage has been done over years at this point, or like over the last year or so, I would say, with these titles. So it's like, announcing this show, I don't know if it was their idea. Maybe they're trying to use this to kickstart things, and they're going to take it more seriously now, the division. I hope. But it feels like a step one. That's my main kind of way. So.
I just hope that this is not another part of a self-fulfilling prophecy where they do a junior show and then come to the conclusion that the juniors don't draw.
And it has nothing to do with the talent.
No, exactly. But when I'm looking at this card, I would be shocked if this does a lot more than 1,000 fans in Sumo Hall.
Yikes. That's not a positive outlook here, but I mean, who could argue with you?
I mean,
I mean Hayata's in the main event of this show. You know, like, I mean, no offense, but Hayata is in the main event of a Sumo Hall show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know why. It's clear they see something in him. Maybe he has some kind of merchandise sales that, you know, is there. But I don't know. There's nothing interesting about this either way, because Hayata just had a really long title reign a year ago. This show, if they had known better, there should have been some kind of build to somebody. I don't care who it is. There's a lot of talented guys on this roster you could put in this role. There should have been somebody fighting and clawing their way to get a definitive title win that they finally, you know, climb to. Hayata just came off of a big title reign 3 months ago, you know? And so it's like, I don't know if he's the right person for this. It's nothing about him even as a talent, whatever you think of him. I just don't think it was built very well. And then you change the title right before the show, too, into Ada, which is fine. Ada's a fine worker. I really like him and all of that stuff. It's just the way they've built up the show, I don't think it's really been very effective. Up and down the card, outside of one match.
Once again, baffling, of course. Yes, you said it right. Ada, he's a good guy. He's a good guy to put on top of a promotion, too. But once again, they've put an outsider on top of their cards. And that just speaks volume about their ability or their thinking about what their divisions look like.
And it's a shame that they ended this way, because like I said, I think in the right circumstance, this show could have worked really well. And maybe it will. Maybe it'll surprise us. Maybe there's a lot of effort. Again, I've always said, you know, if you build it, they will come. And there is a novelty to this being an all-junior show at the end of the day. Maybe, but at the end, like, what's the end game of the show? If Eita wins, then, like you said, there's an outsider as champion. And if Hayata wins, it's a guy who's just champion a bunch, like getting the title right back that we've seen. And, you know, I don't see a big, you know, there needs to be a good goal to the end of a major show. But instead, as I said, hopefully, my only hope of this isn't about business or even match quality, because I think there would probably be some good matches on this undercard. You know, if we're being fair, you know, something like Hidaka and Fujimura, that's going to be a fine opener. I think that's going to be really good, actually. Yeah. How would Io have some emotion to it? Yoshioka and Tiger, I think, will be a good match. You know, I think the sixth man, I think Harada is going to bring a lot to that. And him squaring off with Shun, I think, will be a really great matchup in particular. And SBK as well. You know, a lot of good guys in that match. Tag match, I think, will be really good. Ridgeway is a tremendous wrestler, in my opinion. Kotage and Yohei, they've done a fine job as a tag team. I think they fit together pretty well. And I think Kotage is a great worker. And I think that match will be good. But my only hope of all of this isn't about business or even great matches. I hope it's a sign. And like you said, the main thing is that they don't, if this doesn't go well, I hope that they don't talk themselves into, like you said, a self-fulfilling prophecy to where, oh, the juniors just aren't that important, so we're not going to care about them anymore. We're going to do what we keep doing.
Yeah, we just have to beat them, and that's it.
Or not even just that. Like, not even just losing, because, I mean, that's historical in Japan. But the way they booked them with everybody turning, and there's no logic to anything, and things are just done to pop themselves, it seems like. You know, like, nothing really that the fans can get attached to, and people make fun of it. That's a failing recipe, by all intents and purposes. But if they use this show and they look at it as a stepping off point to the next phase of the junior division, then I think there's still value to the show at the end of the day. Even if it doesn't do good, even if the matches there might not be a match of the year candidate, I do think the show will probably be good to watch. But I think that they need to use this as a springboard to the next era, to where if they do another show like this, next time they'll do it better, where they have somebody built up that can really, you know, elevate the division and give us something to root for and be interested in.
Yeah, let's look at next night's card, April 30, that is, 11 matches. Slex and Kaya Fujimura against Kinya Okada and Yasutaka Yano. King Tani, the second match. King Tani, Mohamed Yone and Akitoshi Saito against Manabu Soya, Tadasuke and Hajime Ohara. Third match. Nosawa Rongai, Eita, Tehan Jr., Kotaro Suzuki, and Super Crazy against Hayata, Yoshinari Ogawa, Chris Ridgway, Seki Yoshioka, and Yuya Susumu. Fourth match, Kazushi Sakuraba and Kendo Kashin against Masaki Mochizuki and Don Fuji. That should be really cool. Masato Tanaka and Daiki Inaba against René Dupré and El Hero del Dr. Wagner Jr. Masa Kitamiya versus Michael Elgin. GHC National Title, Masakatsu Funaki against Simon Gotch. Daisuke Harada, Atsushi Kotoge, Yohei and Yuta Miyawaki versus Dragon Bane, Alpha Wolf, Extreme Tiger, Ninja Mac. Match number 9, probably the most interesting part of the show. Naomi Chimaru Fuji and X versus Kaito Kiyomiya and Yoshiki Inamura. GHC Tag Team Title, Takashi Sugiura and Hideki Suzuki defend against Kenno and Katsuhiko Nakajima. And for the heavyweight title, Katsuki Fujita defends against Go Shiozaki. When I'm looking at this card, Dylan, I have no idea why I should go to the first show, because lots of the talent on the first show is on the second show too, and in some cases in similar matches.
Definitely the multi-man matches stand out with the junior heavyweights there. But it's a good... If anything, not even just that, I think it's a good reminder of where they see them when they're in these undercard matches, so to speak. At least they put the Lucha guys in a bigger match, you know, near the end with Harada, Kotage, Yohei, and Miyawaki. You know, so that's like the eighth match on the card. So that's nice that they had a little bit of a bump for those guys there. But regardless, you know, again, just like I said, and most of these big shows, I don't think you're holding against the first show. The undercard is not that important. The main thing here you look at is so many outside talent on this show on here. I don't know why that is, because I don't know.
So much outside talent taking good places on the card with Michael Elgin and Simon Gotch. And when these matches were announced, we know about how everybody reacted to Michael Elgin being announced for this card, and I was one of them. We know about the history of Michael Elgin, about the allegations against Michael Elgin, and the way he left Japan the last time was really weird. He had these two gigs for Noah and for Big Japan, and then he was never seen again in Japan. Also, of course, also due to the pandemic, I would say. Still, though, he's now back, taking a good spot on the card with a singles match, and also Simon Gotch in a singles match against Funaki. I don't have anything in particular against Simon Gotch, but I thought from the perspective of the roster, of the home roster for Pro Wrestling NOAH, these two guys being in so prominent positions, that has to be taken with a lot of frustration, I would imagine, from the home roster, especially for the GHC national title. I'm just assuming here, it's just me thinking, maybe Funaki wasn't going to lose to a guy from the home roster, but on the contrary, they also didn't want to feed another one of these young guys to Masakatsu Funaki. So what do? Get an outsider in and booking him against Funaki. That's what I think they did here. Then with Kitamiya and Elgin, this is a match that looks like where the next challenger for the heavyweight title is built up. And I don't actually consider Masa Kitamiya winning this one. So that's where we are. What do you think about these matches?
I really have no problem with Gotch, and I'll tell you why. When you commit to Funaki as your champion, you're kind of putting yourself into, it's going to be a certain style of match, right? Mm-hmm. With Funaki, and Simon Gotch is that, you know, can work that style. We've seen him once more in the past. And ultimately, even if what you said is true, this match is a fine mid-card match. It's not going to, you know, threaten the main event title match just in terms of stylistic differences. But you're doing that, and you're also giving a guy a shot. And if Gotch really connects, and they have a great match, and the fans are into him, and he does what he can do, then this is a good way to get a look at a guy. And if it doesn't work, then you can move on. I don't really know what their thought process is, because there's so many of them, even on the undercard matches on there. So it's going to be interesting to see what their own opinion is. We saw them on Twitter put the thing out where they were basically asking for foreign wrestlers to try and sign up and see what they can get, or see who they can get in their emails, pretty much, that they would want. So it's clear that they value foreign talent right now. They're bringing a lot in, which I think is a costly move for them. I don't have the books in front of me. Maybe it's just maybe this is some business situation that we don't understand fully. Somebody's making this call. You know, someone upstairs is saying, look, we need foreign talent. The restrictions are opening up. We need to bring as many people as we can into this.
There definitely has been a giant shift in talent policy. You can tell just from looking at the cards.
Yeah, so to me, again, this feels like a business decision. On the show with Fumi, one of the things I was very unhappy about, I complained to him about, as I will always complain about when this subject comes up, after the All Japan split in 2000, when Muto would bring in random people, or like start, when he brought in the eight-man character. And he was like, well, yes, that was bad, but also it was a sponsorship deal with the clothing line. So that, to me, that's kind of what I've been saying a lot on these crazy decisions that no one's been making. It feels like a lot of this is made by people upstairs, a business type of decision that unfortunately usually leads to terrible circumstances, much like Ape Man in All Japan. And that's the thing with Elgin. I think that if you're going to bring him in, there's two theories, because there is a theory that I have that I feel like someone, or maybe multiple people in NOAH, truly believe that bad publicity is good. Like any publicity is good publicity. If you look at all of the, if you look at their moves they've made, they're going out of their way, it feels like, to piss off a certain segment of their fans. Yes. So I wonder if this is not on purpose. That's kind of like conspiracy theory-ish, but if you look at what they've done, that's how I feel like a lot of the ways. Like they're intentionally trying to get people talking about them. It doesn't matter if it's a great match, great storyline, bad, bringing in people nobody wants. Like, it seems like they don't care, and they just want to. Well, they clearly don't care, but it also may not be – it may be on purpose as well, because they think that it's good for them for whatever reason, which is troubling to think about it in a lot of these ways. I agree with you about Elgin and Kitamiya being a de facto number one contenders match. Perhaps they see something in Elgin that, again, we don't see in him in terms of the Japanese fan base. I'm sure a lot of the fan base probably isn't aware or caring of any allegations against him either, to be honest with you. So, like, they're, and in reality, that probably isn't going to bother them that much anyway, because the local fan base probably isn't the same as the English people.
I said it when they announced him. There was a lot of backlash on within the Twitter bubble that we are part of. Mm-hmm. And there was someone replying to me that they hoped that NOAH gets Elgin off the card after they read all the replies to that. And I just told him, no, this is just a bubble. This is just a tiny bubble of people who reassure themselves of their own opinions. So that is not going to happen.
And they're English speaking at the end of the day. Like, we can't buy tickets, you know, to their shows. Their fans, like their local fans, will buy tickets on their shows. I wonder if this isn't something about maybe someone thinking, man, we need to get these Wrestle Universe subscriptions up. Because I think it's an open secret that a majority of these streaming service subscribers are not Japanese. They're foreigners. Mm-hmm. So like that may be something they're thinking. That's why they're overloading on a lot of foreign talent right now. Which
and
I
overloading
do think,
from all parts of the world, basically.
That's true. I mean, they've got it from every corner. America, you know, UK, Mexico.
There's no African wrestler, though.
Maybe on Helico, if it was
well,
South Africa.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, but, what's TJ Black up to?
I've not seen him since Ring of Honor TV stopped. I stopped watching Ring of Honor TV. I gotta say, Ring of Honor TV didn't stop, but I watched. I stopped watching.
Okay, well, there's a couple of I used to watch like South African wrestling a lot, actually, back in the day. But regardless, yes, they're missing Africa, but they've got Australia. They've got almost every continent. You're right. They need an African wrestler now there to unite, and someone from Antarctica as well.
Oh, I think that will be difficult. I don't know. If you know any wrestler from Antarctica, let me know.
That should be someone's gimmick, I feel like.
the champion of Antarctica.
Man, why didn't I do this? That's a brilliant idea in so many ways, but that's my unofficial title. I'm declaring myself the champion of Antarctica now. One time I declared myself, like, because I thought world titles sounded stupid, I declared myself intergalactic champion there to overcome world champion. So that would be my new territory, Antarctica.
Yes.
But regardless, there's too many people, too many foreigners that they've brought in. This has to cost them lots of money to bring all these people in, and I don't know what they think they're going to gain from it, because ultimately, none of these guys that they're bringing in, you know, no disrespect to these people, but they're not going to draw an English-speaking fan base, and Elgin automatically is going to turn people off, you know, when it comes to that. So I think they're misguided. Someone needs to sit down with whoever is making these decisions, because I don't understand what will happen. Again, maybe it'll all work out. Maybe Elgin will be a super draw for Japanese people and we'll all, you know, have to eat it. But to me, on paper, what I'm looking at, I'm not too positive about what they're doing. And this whole show, actually, you know, and again, much like the other show, the last three matches all have potential. But, yeah. You know, as a show, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
I want to know two things from you, Dylan.
Okay.
Is Shiozaki winning the title? And is X going to be Kenta?
I think Kenta is going to be X. Like, that's the obvious one, I feel like. It's going to be interesting, though, because of all that went into the New Japan stuff. And they've kind of, you know, the funny thing is, if you notice, New Japan's kind of not really leaned into that at all. Since that match, they've been much more intimate with another promotion we'll talk about coming forward, or two other promotions, in fact, that we'll be talking about coming in. But they've really drifted away from Noah, so it's going to be interesting. Maybe Kenta himself would request that, or they feel like they have some kind of storyline with that. Remember, Kenta was placed on the Noah side during that whole deal, so maybe that's something that you could look at. But I think he's the logical choice on there. Maybe it'll be Muto coming back early.
Maybe it will be Muto. That could be. But they said it will be the biggest X possible. Something like that, they said.
Oh, okay.
And if that's the case, I don't know if there is a bigger X you can bring in for Pro Wrestling Noah than Kenta.
What about Zeus from the Big Guns? The biggest.
It doesn't necessarily have any history with Noah, but sure, why not?
Pro.
It could be anyone. But as you mentioned it, on the show where Kenta was, he was placed on the Noah side, and he also had these interactions with Yoshiki Nomura on that card. So that will make sense as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so happy they're putting Kaito and Itamura as a team. I think they're a fantastic team in terms of wrestling matches. I hope that they stick together.
Yes, absolutely. They should be tag team champions very soon.
Yes, I wish that would happen.
I mean, I mentioned Kenta because it makes just logical sense to talk about him with Pro Wrestling Noah. But it also, when you look at how he dropped the title, it kind of makes sense that he is not with Pro Wrestling, with New Japan Pro Wrestling anymore. He dropped the title on January 5, the United States Championship, to Tanahashi. Of course, in that match, he was injured and couldn't wrestle afterwards anymore. But this is right around the time where contracts with New Japan Pro Wrestling usually come to an end. And this sounds like a contract-ending loss that Kenta suffered here. Of course, that is also just me assuming stuff, which would open Kenta for other promotions, which could be Pro Wrestling Noah.
Let's just go all in with this. Like you said, this is all speculation at this point. We don't know for sure. Let's go to fantasy booking land here. Let's just say it is Kenta, and not my prediction of Zeus and the big guns. But regardless, but Kenta, let's say it's Kenta. Where would you go from there with him? So he comes in, teams with Mara Fuji, presumably beats Kaito and Inamura.
Yeah.
What would we do with him after that?
Since the Ems Alliance has split, I would go to create a stable with him and Mara Fuji, where they could take in two other guys. Maybe they could take in Kiyomiya and Inamura to be guides for them. One could be the guide for Kiyomiya, one could be the guide for Inamura to learn something from the legends of the past, to transfer that to their knowledge and to build them up as the new future stars of the company, guided by the two biggest names that are still there from Pro Wrestling Noah's side. That's what I would do.
That seems like a great idea, honestly. I totally love that, everything about that, because to me, if Kenta comes in, ultimately his end game, if that were to happen, is that he needs to go for the title. That needs to be where his ultimate quest ends for him, is to win the title back and become the hero of Noah once again, like he was.
And if he comes back, I really think that he will win the title once more.
I totally agree with that. If that were to happen, he's winning the title at some point, and probably at the start of next year. I would say, and that gives you a storyline for like the entire rest of the year that can carry you. And that Kenta going for the title, that would get interest. That would be good publicity, because they desperately need that. They need something good that they can hang their hat on and turn people's opinions around on things. At the end of the day, they need something good, and that would be it. So I hope it's Kenta, honestly. I really do. And that would be a great match on top of it. Kaito and Inamura, I think no matter who it is, it's going to be a great match because of the other team. But I would love your idea, and I would hope it's Kenta. The tag title match, I think that could
before,
be a great
before we
match.
Go to that, another name that was speculated in Japanese bubbles was Kota Ibushi.
I thought you were going to say Zeus. But no. Why am I trying to get Zeus into Noah?
I don't know.
Listen, O-Pro needs to rise up again. But Ibushi. Again, if New Japan is going to continue this relationship, like, I guess that would make sense. You know, again, we're trying to jump to these conclusions. We're trying to presume people have left their contracts secretly and nobody knows about it there, which is a tall task. But Ibushi coming in, that would be cool, you know, Ibushi and Mara Fuji. I would get down with that. Hey, they have history as a team. Remember the famous match they had with Kenta and Ishimori? One of the best matches in Noah in 2007. So they have a little bit of history there. That could be cool. I'd be down with that. I don't expect that, but I think it would be cool if it happened.
Is there anyone else that comes to mind?
Mara Fuji. Like, who would be in his history that would makes sense. Maybe Suzuki. Minoru Suzuki.
Suzuki. That makes sense, too.
On there. I really don't think it'll be any of those people, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, Suzuki's possible. They have the Noah deal. They could come in there. I don't know if that's as good as some other guys in terms of that. Let's look at his tag partners on this wonderful website called cagematch.net. Let's look at some of the people he's been aligned with. So Kenta, Minoru Suzuki, Toru Yano, it could be, on there. We have there Ishimori, obviously. Ricky Marvin, part of Brave, okay, on there. Bring him in. Why not bring in more foreigners on there? I would go with that. Then you had, like you said, the Ems Alliance broke up. So, yeah, I think it'll probably be one of the people like that from his past. Kenta is the favorite, but, you know. Okay, let's go. You know, if they went way outside of the box, maybe they could call up somebody like, again, I don't even want to speculate on this, but just throwing a name out there from his past on there. Like, if they were somehow able, and we don't know what he's been doing lately, obviously the way he left was bad, but if Morishima is planning some kind of secret comeback, maybe they have that something up their sleeve. Again, I don't expect that, but that's just somebody they could pull out. It would be a great publicity deal for them if somehow he could return and have that retirement show that he never got to have.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, as much as you can say about that match. But you were going to talk about the tag title match.
I think the tag match could be great. Like that to me is the best match on the show in terms of wrestling. Hideki and Nakajima had a phenomenal match earlier this month, as they tend to do between each other, much like their first match a couple of years ago. Sugera and Kenno was that was good. Like I said, I enjoyed it for what it was. And as a tag match, I think they have a lot they could do between them all. The thing is, Nakajima, to me, is in really a no-man's-land situation right now, where after he lost the title in embarrassing fashion, it just feels like he's, like, trending in a downward way. And I don't... Like, this isn't going to be the match to stop that, I don't think. So
no, he's once again slotted as a tag team guy.
Yeah, and in a really... Like, the tag team he's in isn't nearly as prolific as the ones he had before, either. This feels like a filler title defense, honestly. Even though it'll be a great match, it doesn't feel like there's anything important with it. I don't think they're going to win the titles. And this might be the catalyst to set up some kind of deal with, you know, Kongo finally, and that will be his path going forward. But to me, I think that they need to do something with him very quickly, or he's going to really lose a lot of steam. Because I think he was hurt bad by that title loss, in my opinion. I think that's something I would like to see. He looked very good in the Hideki match. They both look great in there. But I think they need to get him doing something where he can really like have a dominant resurgence to like be the Nakajima that he was before. Soon.
I don't have anything to add to that, actually. This leaves my first question still is unanswered by you. Is Shiozaki winning the championship?
Yeah, I think he will. I don't love how this has all played out, to be honest with you. This feels like... It felt like a storyline they were building and that could go throughout the entire year. And then it's like, okay, well, we're just doing the match now. Mm-hmm. So this really isn't as built up. Again, much like the other main event on the junior show, these matches aren't built up that well. And I don't know why it is. It feels like there's a lot of panic booking going on in general.
Yeah, that's it. That is
it. Yeah. That you're right. You're totally right. There doesn't need to be anymore. It's panic booking here. And Fujita clearly has not captured the imagination of the NOAH audience as champion.
Shocking.
You know, his match with Tanaka was solid. I didn't think that was a tremendous match or a terrible one, which I think some people will fall on. I think it was in between a fine title match. I just think him as champion sets all the wrong precedents for the company, regardless of him as a talent. So they're probably going to try and reverse course on that and go to go, which will be interesting going forward. I think him as champion at least opens the door for a lot of questions. To be answered when it comes to him. His title reign before was at a largely empty audience, and now he gets another run. And this time, like I said, the restrictions look like they're easing up across Japan, so he might get to have a real run with this, and I'm excited for that. You know the matches will be all good. I mean, I think this will be a great match, in all likelihood. I think Go will come in there prepared to lay it on the line and make this an awesome match for the fans. And in this whole weekend, because at the end of the day, we're probably, we weren't super positive on the junior show. This show, to me, looks more interesting on paper than this heavyweight one. But regardless, it's not like lighting our world on fire. Regardless of all that, this is a big, big weekend for the company. And they want to end it on a great note. If Go wins the title, the fans all love it, and they have a tremendous match, and he looks great in it. I think that will at least, again, they need positive momentum right now, this company in general. And him winning the title, I think, accomplishes that.
I would agree with that, and with that, I think that is it, what we can say for Pro Wrestling NOAH for now. Let's turn our attention, Dylan, to the tournament that is going on right now in Japan with the Champion Carnival. We are in the middle of a nice break between the first set of shows and the last set of shows. They did 5 shows between April 9 and April 15. And on the last episode we did together, we talked about the majority of those shows already. And now we still have three shows left with block stage matches before the final event happens on May 4 in Curriken Hall with the final of the two block winners facing off. And what we have still left is on Saturday, April 23rd. Sadly, not a live show. That actually threw a wrench in my weekend plans, as we talked about it before the recording started, because I was planning to watch this live, but it isn't live. It will be a VOD on All Japan TV. And usually they only put up their VODs during the night time here in Germany, so it will be hard for me to catch up with those matches before the next day on Sunday, April 24, the Curriken Hall show will be live. So for Shiba, 2AW Square on April 23rd, it's Shigehiro Irie versus T-Hawk, Jake Lee versus Ryuki Honda, Kento Miyahara versus Yoshitatsu, and Yuma Aoyagi versus Kuma Arashi. Then Curriken Hall has three matches, all from Block A. Jake Lee versus T-Hawk, Shotaro Ashino versus Shigeru Irie, Shuji Ishikawa versus Ryuki Honda. Then Block B, Kento Miyahara versus Yuma Aoyagi, wink wink, Suwama versus Yoshitatsu, and Takuya Nomura versus Kuma Arashi. It doesn't really take a lot of thinking, Dylan, where this is heading.
Absolutely. We know that Yoshitatsu is finally going to make his run.
Finally.
It's what we've all been waiting for. But no, Yoshitatsu Kento and Yuma is
kingdom.
Yes, which reunited after all of their feuding earlier in the year. Yes. In a very random segment. But regardless, Kento and Yuma, that's going to decide to block. So.
Yes, I'm looking at Block B, Block A, excuse me, Block B, of course, is Kento Miyahara.
Kento's coming to All Japan.
Kento Miyahara sounds like a great wrestler, actually.
Yes, maybe that could be their tag team name if Kento does go to All Japan.
Block A is a little bit more up in the air, but still, though, there is Jake Lee versus T-Hawk on the final day, which will be the deciding match. Is Jake Lee the one question that I have, is Jake Lee dropping a fall in this tournament?
You know, the way it's going, he might not. He's beaten Irie so far. Mm-hmm. He beats Suwama, right?
Yep.
He lost to Ashino already. So.
Ah, yeah, right. He lost to Ashino. Yeah. So he's not taking a loss anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a very fast match, too, that Ashino and Jake match. That was like a 5-minute match or something.
Yep, the 7 minutes, I think it was, very short. Yeah, like right now, Jake Lee, Shigeyori Irie, T-Hawk, and Ashino, they each have 4 points. Shuji Ishikawa has also 4 points. Ryuki Honda has lost his first three matches, and given that he only has 2 matches left, he can't make any efforts anymore to advance to the finals. He'll probably like win one more match. I'm looking at his final match. He will probably beat Shuji Ishikawa. There.
Jake beat Ishikawa, not Suwama. Excuse me. Honda.
True.
Yeah.
Suwama is in the other block.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Jake Lee going up to the finals. This has been a very decent tournament, I would say. The first show had a really great flow. We talked about that on our last show, where I said I would actually go out to give this a 9 out of 10 if this would have happened in Curriken Hall. But so, it did in Osaka, it was an 8 out of 10 show for me, with the two main events, with Arashi defeating Kento Miyahara, which was a great surprise, and Aoyagi over Suwama. Everything after that is really not must-see material. But it also is not bad. And the formatting of it all, of them just doing 3 or 4 matches per show, makes this tournament a breeze to watch in comparison to a G1 Climax, for example. So in that regard, I really enjoyed this Champion Carnival, because, as you mentioned, with Jake Lee and Ashino, this has had a lot of short heavyweight matches that really were exciting to watch because of their short length. And except for that, the main events didn't go overly long either. Where I'm just looking at Suwama and Kumarashi, which was a 15-minute match. Miyahara versus Nomura was a 16-minute match, which was really good, by the way. And yeah, so it was really good to watch, but it didn't blow anyone away, I would say.
Yeah, the two main matches in terms of length was the draw with Kento and Suwama.
Sure.
And then you had the Jake and Ishikawa match with, I think, over 20. But, you know, for the most part, like you said, this has been a very easy tournament to watch. I completely agree with you on that. And, like, nothing's bad either. There's no, like, weird guy like in the tournament that's ruining everything or anything like that. You know, even the guys that you might not have been super excited for, like Kuma and Yoshitatsu, have done fine in all of their matches. And Kuma actually had a really good match with Kento as well. So there's been, like, the floor of this tournament is still very high at the end of the day. You know, like, the worst it gets is still, like, solid throughout. And then I would say the one person that's really stood out is Nomura. His matches with Aoyagi, Kento, and Suwama have all been very strong, in my opinion. And especially the Suwama match, I thought, was a great match.
The Suwama match, they had this amazing moment where Suwama hit him with a lariat straight into the face and gave him this huge black eye, which he documented afterwards, which was just an incredible strike. And he just provoked Suwama with his own strikes to throw one back. So that was really cool, yes.
Yeah, I think both of those matches were great matches. The Kento and the Suwama matches versus Nomura. I think the big storyline coming out of this is just how uninspiring Jake Lee is in all of his matches. I have not been a fan of his in this tournament at all. You know, and you see a lot of these other guys. Like I said, even the bottom tier guys are really stepping up, it feels like. And then you've got Jake, and he's doing his thing, and something's just not clicking with him at all, I feel like. And I think, too, something to notice, because we talked about this a little bit on the first show, you look at the attendances for the show, they correspond with very odd choices for main events throughout. Because you look at the second night, they had Kento and Suwama, which is a match everyone's seen a million times. Then you have Jake and the Big Dog, like Jake in the main event again there.
Yeah.
Kento and Nomura, Big Japan guy, he's not a draw in the main event. And then Suwama and Kuma, who's definitely not any kind of draw in the main event. So it's
that
like
was a wild choice over Ishikawa and Ashino.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Ashino, you put all this time and effort into on there. Why value Kuma over Ishikawa? Like, I don't know. But regardless, very weird choices for main events throughout this entire tour, I would say. And I think it's hurt their business factor. But regardless, it's the middle of the tournament. As I said, we have to wait until the end of the tournament to really give a clear vision on all of that. But just to watch, I think all the shows have been good. And what you said is true. I would say those two matches are the ones and I also think the Yuma and Nomura match was very good as well. Very, very entertaining. But I'd say a lot of them. Hey, a guy who's really stood out to me, I think Irie has had a great tournament.
Absolutely.
Like way underrated coming into it, I feel like. Because he's a guy nobody was really talking about in comparison, even to T-Hawk and Nomura. I think he got overlooked a little. But if you look at his run, I think he's done a phenomenal job. He showed a great gear. And we already know, me and you, Stringer, we've been watching this guy for years. We know how talented he is. But I think that he's really showing it again in this format, to where he's not just like random freelancer on the mid-card, which is his usual role in all the promotions he is. Here he's getting a focus in the tournament, and he's really turning it up and having great matches. I thought that he's had some really strong performances throughout the tournament, and a guy that I would definitely advise everybody to check out, because I think he's done a lot of good throughout his matches that he's had. Another thing I wanted to talk about, too, that's really been irritating, to be honest with you, in my opinion, is that all of T-Hawk's matches have these weird finishes to them, and not in a good way, where, you know, so-and-so... I said this on the first show, and they've extended this to all of his matches virtually, where so-and-so will hit a big move, and then somehow T-Hawk will just pop up and roll him up for a finish or something like that on there. Why? Why are we doing this with T-Hawk? It's very political and not in a good way.
You just said it. It's political.
Well, yes. Yes, you're right. I'm asking a dumb question. But I still do not like watching it. I think it's hurt a lot of his matches. Because if you look at their wrestling throughout the tournament for T-Hawk, he's done a really good job, I feel like. But then you have these weird finishes that kind of take me out of all of his matches. So I hope that they drop that on
that
the
back. That is really what hurt him a lot in this tournament. I wouldn't really go out to say that T-Rock's matches have been really well worth checking out just because of these weird finishes. Yeah.
Yeah, and he, like I said, he's wrestled good in most of them. It's just that, like you said, just very weird finishes at the end of the day. Even his match versus Ashino, I think a lot of people had circled that as one of the best matches, that their most anticipated matches. But mm-hmm. I don't think it really lived up to that as a top-tier match of the tournament.
You mentioned Shigeyori Irie as one guy to watch in this tournament. I would say that Yuma Aoyagi so far has been the best performer in this tournament. And I would strongly recommend anyone to watch all of his matches, because this realistically is the guy that they should give a huge push to right now, given that Jake Lee is not working as the project that they chose. Yuma Aoyagi, is he the final straw that they still have for a next star?
I think they've set things up to where Ashino can be good to go in a year, and I think Honda will be the next guy after that. If
Yeah.
If things don't work with Aoyagi.
Exactly. But it's just, I was just like talking about these the current generation of guys that they have already set up to a degree where you would say that Ashino and Honda probably two levels below, Ashino still a level below where Aoyagi and Jake Lee currently are. Mm-hmm. And with that, they really, we said it a year ago with Jake, but they really need Yuma Aoyagi to happen.
And I hope that they don't do something weird and change him to the point that they've changed Jake, because I thought what he was doing before was actually good, Jake. I think the turn has been a huge misstep in hindsight.
The turn has worked on one night, and that was the night the turn happened.
Yes. Yeah, the night the turn happened, it was great because you had the intrigue, and even that was more about Ashino getting turned on, in my opinion, than Jake himself. But him as this character, it's time to pull the plug on this gimmick. Like, whatever they have planned for him, I think that they need to make this change sooner rather than later, because it's just not working, and I don't think that it's really captured the audience at all either. So I think Aoyagi, I love his talent. It'll be interesting how they use him. And he's a guy, in his heel run, he looked really good, you know, before they didn't push him. Like, that 1 month that they gave him the push, I thought he did a great job in it. And even in this tournament, when he faced Nomura, he was a great prick in that match.
Yeah.
I thought. So I think he's got a little bit more range than Jake in general. And in general, he's just a more expressive and charismatic worker, in my opinion. But I like Jake's talent still. I just don't think this gimmick is going to do him any good. I think they need to get rid of it, do whatever they need to do, have Honda take over the group and get him out of there and do something else with him. And Aoyagi, I like a lot. Like you said, he's the guy that I think this will ultimately be. And he's done good in all of his matches, too. I like I said, I think he's a great talent, ultimately. Like, whatever way you slice it, I love his ability. I like his charisma, his character. Everything about him is good, in my opinion. I will say Nomura, I think, has had a great tournament as well. I think he's probably had the best matches, but Aoyagi is the one that – he's the All-Japan guy. He's the one you want to watch. He's the character part of it as well. So I think those two would both stay down. And, you know, in general, though, I think everybody's done pretty good in the tournament. Just we have some kinks to work out there with Jake, his character, or T-Hawk and his finishes and all of that. I think there's a couple of kinks, but for the most part, I think everybody has done a good job.
On last show, we speculated about Kento Miyahara and Jake Lee getting back together as a tag team as the original Next Dream. And they planted a seed on this last show from Shinkiba on April 15, where after the third match, Kento Miyahara, Atsuki Aoyagi, and Raizen Hayato, they lost to Jake Lee, Goto Omori, and Yusuke Kodama. Aoyagi and Hayato attacked Kento Miyahara after the match, mainly because he was being a pain in the ass. It was not like they turned on him or something. He was just being really naggy. And they just wanted to get out of the ring. So they attacked him. But you could always bring that up when an eventual Next Dream split happens.
I'm all for this. Bring Jake and Kento back together. That's my train I'm driving right now. bring back the old Jake. Bring back the old Next Dream. Have them come in there. Let's hit the reset button on Jake and let's get things back to how they should be, in my opinion. But hopefully Tajiri, the big dog, they're listeners of this show. I think we can both agree on that. That's inside sources have told me that they both are devout listeners of the Eastern Lariat. They respect us. And hopefully they heard my idea. And they were like, damn, why didn't we think of that? We got to get this ball rolling, baby. And I think that that's exactly what's going to happen. I think that because we put it out there, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So that is it for All Japan Pro Wrestling. And next topic that I have on my list, Dylan, involves one wrestler that is in the Champion Carnival with T-Hawk. Want to go to Great. Great, they had 3 shows already this month. Their G Pro Wrestling version 21, 22, and 23. All of them were available through YouTube. 2 of them, actually, from Fukuoka on the 16th and from Shinjuku Face from the 20th. They were live. The other one was taped from Osaka. What's your stance on Great right now?
See, you were trying to get me to say, oh, it's great. But I'm not going to make that pun, Stringer. You're not going to trick me into that. I would say they are an absolutely wonderful, stupendous, spectacular, excellent promotion. Right now,
yes, I really enjoy them as well. It's man, I was just thinking the other day, Dylan, when the Dark Ages, not the Dark Ages of Japanese Pro Wrestling that you talked about with Fumi and with Jonathan, but the Dark Ages of accessibility of Japanese Pro Wrestling, like in the around 2010, it was really hard to get current Japanese Pro Wrestling, like. You could get shows, but usually you would get them 3, 4, 5 weeks after they originally happened. But nowadays it's so easy, and Great is using YouTube as the platform. And the accessibility of this promotion is just off the charts. They are doing everything right when it comes to marketability and catering to fans both in and outside of Japan. And I think it really shows they have built up a roster of guys, and they are slowly but surely building. They are not doing too many big buildings, but they are just building their roster time after time. We're going to talk about the groups, having different groups, different teams, different angles with different people there. I just think that they are doing a very good job.
Yeah, it's just such an easy promotion to watch up and down. Never mind the accessibility. Just their shows are always like very fun to watch. It's light, like not lighthearted, but in terms of the pace that they go, it's very fast paced, very easy to watch up and down the cards. Pretty much, you know, pretty much all the undercard matches. You know, maybe there'll be a 6-man tag or something that might be around 15, but otherwise, you're looking at probably, you know, 10-minute or less matches up until the big main events and stuff like that. You know, the last 2 matches and things like that of the card, maybe. But you're getting some good stuff on there. You're getting a very unique combination of talent, too. They always have a Joshi match on their shows to break things up a little bit. We saw in their last show yesterday, they had that one-count deal.
That's something Shima. That Shima has already done when he was in Dragon Gate.
And he brought it back to Great here, but yeah, like they'll try different stuff. We've seen stuff before in the past where maybe they'll bring a guy that's not a shoot stylist into one of their shows. Like Sekimoto was on one of their shows last month, so it's like they're bringing in this. You know, it feels like too they're like friendly with every promotion somehow, pretty much except for 01 and Big Japan. But they're like friendly with every other promotion to where they can grab people. They'll bring people from Joshi. They'll bring, you know, Kazuma was on their last show. You know, they have their own little core roster too of people basically around the groups, which I know you're wanting to talk about. So
yeah, they're using Masato Kamino from Basara as well, using Rising Hayato, Atsuki Aoyagi at times from All Japan. So yeah, really friends with all the promotions.
Taida there?
Tida, yes. Tida is there.
Tidal Heart? Taida Heat? rather?
Yeah, he was Tida Heat. Yes, he used to be, but he's now just going as Tida. He's a guy I've been talking about for 2 years, basically. He was in a Ryukyu Dragon Pro Wrestling originally.
Ace 8 was on one of their shows this month, as well. Yes. I've a longtime favorite of the grungy indies.
The champion of Okinawa Pro.
Okinawa, where we talked about him, me and Fumi did with Super Delphin on there. Ace 8 continuing his spiritual success here in great. Although he didn't lose.
He has been champion for 2,846 days now.
A prolific title reign.
Do you want to guess how many title defenses he has had in his reign?
Two.
Close. Three.
I'm sorry, Ace 8. I didn't mean to sell you short on that one. Hopefully one day Okinawa Pro will rise again with him there. But he's getting work here, and Tida in there, the correct pronunciation there. And they've done a great job of building their homegrown roster, so to speak, into these different factions. And they've done it pretty organically to where, you know, last year was all about the promotion of Bulk Orchestra.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Strong Hearts. And now they're starting this new group. You know, they started on the show a couple months ago where it was called 60 Seconds with Keiichi Sato, Izuchi, and Jun Tancho are the main guys in that one. And they're a great faction. I love it. Jun Tancho getting some run finally after all
absolutely.
These years.
They just did this three-way six-man tag team deal on the show on the 20th that I thought was a great, exciting main event, as you just said. The pacing is very strong in great. And with these nine guys, they had, of course, three heavyweight guys on the Bulk Orchestra side with Hayato Tamura, Quiet Storm, and Ryuchi Kawakami. And then you had basically six guys who can really go very fast with Jun Tancho, Keiichi Sato, and Tetsuya Itsuki on the 60 Seconds side, Lindemann, Onitsuka, and Tiok on the Strong Hearts side. This match went into almost 22 minutes, and it's really captivating. I love the match.
Yeah, this was like the best possible version of one of those Triangle Gate matches.
Exactly.
It feels like. Because you had the Bulk Orchestra being that solid base set for the other teams, and then the stuff they could do was just so great. I love the 60 Seconds. Like I think they're such a great faction. I've always loved Keiichi Sato. Like I said, he was like a great prospect that just for all kinds of reasons never worked out when he had his chances elsewhere. But now he's in a great spot. Jun Tancho coming up, rising up, and doing his thing. Izuchi's been, I think, of the guys that, you know, came from like Heat Up, he's really been one of the top standouts for sure.
He's so charismatic.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of them, I think they all work well together, all three players, because they're great workers, but like you said, they're very charismatic as well. So they're able to get things going throughout their match. At any point, it feels like something cool could happen with them in the ring. You know, the Strong Hearts team was Tiok and Lindemann. They teamed with Onitsuka in that match, and they're a great team as well. You know, we've always lauded the Strong Hearts, and they're a great team in that format. Bulk Orchestra team was Kawakami, Tamura, and Quiet Storm. The focus was mainly on Tamura, who won that match, actually, as well. So it's like, and he's a great person to build around. Again, a former guy from JTO, was 0-1 champion, you know, and now doing great things there. Him and Kawakami have both found new life.
The greatest part of this match, actually, apart from all the great wrestling, I thought, was when they put their Bulk Orchestra apron on T-Hawk. What a great spot that was. It's a part of their merchandise now. They are selling like aprons. Barbecue aprons.
Now, as someone from Memphis, this is a huge plus, in my opinion, on there. So I will never talk down about these aprons. I love them so much. And that's just another great thing. Again, we're seeing a company right now with great. They're doing stuff that's outside the box. You know, they're using YouTube as their home base. They're having unique merchandise. They're grabbing people from all corners of the indie map. They're doing stuff that is a great ideas across the board, in my opinion, and hopefully will lead to more for them, because I love what they're doing. What other company has aprons for a group? What other company has aprons?
I don't know. And how offensive it was towards T-Hawk to have been put in this book orchestra apron and then being choked by the same apron.
I mean, listen, if you show up at my house and we're having a barbecue and you try to put not my apron but somebody else's apron on me, yes, we're fighting. Like we're throwing hands. It's not going to take a second. No thinking. It's just bop! Like that fast. Like as soon as you hand that apron to me, Stringer.
Won't even last 60 seconds, huh?
No, but no, that will be my faction. Less than sub 60 will be my group going in there. But yes, like we have to fight, and T-Hawk felt the same way on there. Just total disgraceful behavior from Bulk Orchestra. But I do appreciate the apron, so I will let it slide this time.
Bulk Orchestra, they are just tremendous heels in the roles that they have. Just incredible. And they have their mouthpiece with the Nobuhiro Shimatani, who is the odd man out with all these heavyweights, but he's also just like Itsuki. He's so charismatic on the microphone. It's incredible. And also his wrestling is tremendous. I love the guy. So he has this deal with Shima, as you mentioned. He beat him in a one-fall match in 4 minutes. And after that, Shigeyori Irie announced his challenge for the G-Rex title that Lindemann is holding right now. So that's going to be probably one of the next programs. But I'm looking at Hayato Tamura being the next obstacle there for a Lindemann. And before we go to Lindemann, we talked about all the groups, Dylan. With everybody that has found a home in Great Now, I thought it was completely odd that the first two signings that they made in Takanori Ito and Soma Watanabe have basically not found a home in Great. They just feel like they float from tag team match to tag team match. Now they had this singles match in the semi-main event of the show in Shinjuku Face, which I thought was a fine match. But it really didn't feel like that they have found footing in Great so far.
Yeah, you know, now that you brought up Shimatani, he's another guy that found a second life in the company, because he was a DDT guy at first on there, and that's great of him to be able to do that. In terms of Ito and Soma, I think you could kind of lump Izuka into this as too, as guys that looked like they were going to be the backbone of the promotion when it first started, but like you said, they've been odd men out to this point so far, which is a shame, because I think their wrestling is so strong, like between these guys. Ito and Watanabe both, I think, are really good. Soma had a thing, you know, early on where he was going to be in both the UWF style and the ProRes style.
Yeah.
But that just hasn't been able to take off, you know, with how they run their UWF shows, unfortunately.
It's another topic, yeah.
Yeah, and Ito, he's another guy that we saw more of a UWF type of guy early on. But because that UWF style has not been utilized, you see Soma, Ito, Izuka, they're on the outside looking in. They focus more on the ProRes guys, and that's why things are how they are, in my opinion.
But it seems like now that these odd men out are trying to form a new group now. At least Ito and Soma Watanabe seemed friendly after the match. Izuka wanted to join, but Ito wouldn't let him. So maybe there is a three-guy unit coming up.
How dare you, Ito? Izuka is a fantastic performer. Do not kick him out of any kind of group. Because they've been teaming Tanaka and Izuka like a couple of times over the last month. Put them all together. Like have them all be a group.
Yeah,
like I'm down for this
too. On the topic of UWF, Dylan, Daijiro Matsui, who was with the company from day one as well, he's leaving at the end of the month, who was one of the staples of the UWF show. So, yeah, it really seems like that for now they're really focusing on G-Pro, and the UWF style seems to be on the back burner. It just seems like that they are doing a UWF style show every couple of months, but it's not like it's a regular thing anymore.
To me, it's... I complained about this last year, that they didn't do nearly enough of UWF style.
And they're doing even less now.
I mean, you know, it's like once in a while has been their MO. they had that one great show where they had everything. Mm-hmm. But, just look at the name. I mean, UWF was version 2 last month, you know.
Yeah, and G-Pro is version 23 now.
That's their entire promotion. It's not like they've suddenly started doing less. It's like they haven't done it at all, like throughout the promotion. It's clear to me that they see much more in ProRes than the UWF style. And maybe that was that. In my dream world, I wanted this to be the revival, and maybe something similar to what a Big Japan does with the death match and the strong style. I'd want to see UWF and the ProRes mix, but they haven't done that at all. I don't think there's been any change with the promotion, actually, with UWF. I just think that they haven't done it from the beginning, and I don't know why that is, because I feel like their best show was the one where everything was mixed, and that's what they should aspire to, have a UWF style that is as solid as the ProRes style, but they've never done it for some reason. And now Matsui's gone, and like you said, he was a standout player, and a very talented wrestler, in my opinion. But unfortunately, they just, and we're seeing it with these other guys, they just don't value the UWF style as much as they should. That's my one criticism of the promotion. I like I said, I've been saying this for a while now. You know, you look at it, they had it, and you know, just, you have promotions like their version one show last year with Show in the main event, which was a great deal. They had another one where at the end of last year where they had UWFA, was when they had the hair versus hair match, like with Strong Hearts and Bulk Orchestra. That match had UWF stuff on it too. If they mix the styles together, that's them at their best, in my opinion, because it makes them stand out.
Yeah.
You get different talent, and it gives everyone a role. And I just think that they've really dropped the ball on that. That's the one thing I wish that they would change, is that they would care about it more.
They had one match on the show on the 16th, which was actually pretty good, with Minoru Tanaka and Takanori Ito going over Hitamaru Sasaki and Takako Fuke. I thought that that was a good one. And that was a nice mix of styles on that Fukuoka show from Nishitetsu Hall. So I like that.
Even just one match on the show would be good, I think. Like that would be a big upgrade to what they've been doing, in my opinion. And that show too, that had the title match on it. So maybe in their vision, in their mind, UWF is like Big Show only type of deal.
Maybe.
But I wish they would use it more.
Yeah. What did you think about that show first? This was from Nishitetsu Hall, and I brought it up on Twitter. I really like this venue. This is also the venue from where Kyushu Pro does their Monday Night Vi shows when they do that. I think the next one is set on May 1st. Golden Week, of course. And Great ran this place now as well with 238 people in attendance. To me, this really looks like a tiny version of Kurikan Hall.
Yeah, I think it totally fits like this vibe of Great being here at Fukuoka, the crowd. I've noticed this too in general. You know, because we talked about the All Japan show, the draw and all that stuff. But if you look at the crowds that are there, they're very into the action. I think across the board, that the Stardom show that I watched this month, I mean, the crowd was super loud, even just clapping. I think the fans are really fired up all across the board for wrestling right now in Japan.
That's great, yes.
But yeah, I like the venue as well.
Yes, and what do you think about the main event on that show? Lindemann in his first title defense, he defeated Quiet Storm in 1755.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. To me, very basic story where you have a Quiet Storm, who's not a super like tall person, but with his size as much. You know, Lindemann's like a great opponent for him because it makes Quiet look more impressive, in my opinion. And I thought Lindemann did a good job making him feel like a worthy challenger, bumping for him. That's the good thing about his size, is that he can go up against anybody and sell for them and really make the things good here. And that they ended up bringing the match to some big suplexes at the end, as you would expect with Lindemann, and it came together for a really good match. I thought this was a completely solid match. Like, I'd have it like a 7 out of 10.
Yeah. I think you brought up two very good points. Imagine if T-Hawk had won the title, and they would have done T-Hawk versus Quiet Storm as the first title match. I don't think that the match would have stood out in any way, but with Lindemann being the champion, he was able, as you said, to make you believe that Quiet Storm is actually a threat to him just because of not his height, but because of his size. And Lindemann, on the contrary, was able to look good as the babyface in peril here, working from underneath against Quiet Storm. So I think this brought out the best in each wrestler in this main event match. And as I said, basic formula, of course, the face champion getting his offense in early on, then the heel challenger dominating the match with Lindemann coming back in the end. Very basic, but that's what great is doing. They are doing very basic storytelling in the matches. So I really liked that match. I would also go to a 7 out of 10. And so this was a good start to this title reign, I thought.
And, you know, on paper, Quiet Storm is not a strong challenger. So no. It makes, you know, like they got through this match in a very effective way overall. And now with Irie coming in, we're going to see how they handle that, because Irie has a little bit more size height-wise as well. We're going to see how that goes against Lindemann, how he works that. But I think it's going to make his, you know, when he does come up with those big German suplexes, it's going to make them more effective, more interesting to see with Lindemann.
If I'm not mistaken, there has not been a title match set yet. Just looking at the Twitter, but no, doesn't look like there has been a title match announced yet. But what definitely has been announced, Dylan, after the main event, they showed a graphic which created a lot of turmoil online. Because on May 18, from Kirken Hall, it's one of their rare Kirken Hall shows. That's what I like about Great Tour, and they just don't go out of their way to go to big buildings. They just build their audience, build their roster, and then eventually go to a bigger building, like Kirken Hall now. It will be Shima's 25th anniversary premium match. It was announced that Ryuchi Kawakami and Kazuma will face the team of Shima and New Japan Pro Wrestling's Shingo Takagi. What was your first reaction to this?
Look, wrestling's a crazy place, you know. Nobody, you know, it seems like anytime there's shocking heat between people, they always seem to reclaim things somehow. So I was surprised, of course, but this didn't like rock my world the way it did a lot of people, because it's like, I mean, it's surprising, don't get me wrong, but it's like it's wrestling at the same time as well. And Shima is a notorious talker backstage and worker. So who knows how this came about? You know, like I said, I have no inside info. It's not like I was in the room with them while they were talking about this. But, you know, it was surprising, but a worthy main event for that show and for Shima's 25th anniversary match. Like I said, he's a worker, like at the end of the day.
It's absolutely tremendous what he has made for what he has made work for himself this year, like starting out working in the Tokyo Dome, being in the New Japan Cup, now getting Shingo Takagi to be on the Great Show. This is just a tremendous job.
Yeah, and he knows that this is going to get people talking at the end of the day.
Quickly for context here, Shima and Shingo Takagi, they are very well known for disliking each other from their days in Dragon Gate together. That is something that is part of the history of Dragon Gate. Every Dragon Gate fan will know that Shima hates Takagi and Takagi hates Shima. And that is basically the story here. And that is basically also why this created such a turmoil online. So will be very interesting to see, especially, I mean, if Shingo Takagi had been on the opposite side, I don't think the turmoil would have been as big. There would have been some, but them teaming up, that is something that nobody expected.
And why not? Like you said, it got more publicity this way for them doing it than if they had done it the other way. Even Shingo being there, I think automatically, Shingo being there is going to get a pop no matter what, just because it's a New Japan guy like working in great. You know, and not only that, but a main event player in New Japan.
Yeah, we had Show, but now with Shingo Takagi, that's a completely different story now.
Yeah, that alone is a story in itself. I mean, it gets overlooked because of the Shima and Shingo connection that you mentioned, but just the fact that New Japan's putting one of their main guys on this great Korakuen Hall show, that's something to look at. I mean, that's something that, you know, we've seen Shima get his push in New Japan, made it all the way to the final 16, or I think, or was that the final 8 even, I think. He faced Okada.
No, Final 16, third round.
Yeah, third round. Okay. That's right. There was like 48 people. But yes, regardless, he faced Okada in a match and beat multiple people, including their tag team champion. So he got pushed in there. They had Lindemann and T-Hawk work some matches too, some six-man tags. So they've really gotten into this great thing.
Oh, what a final, actually. Sorry, you were right.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. So, yeah. Okay. So, yes, it's a final eight. That's even more impressive to face Okada. And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, it felt like we were all wondering where things were going to go. I mean, you had the OWE stuff, which, again, this man convinced a Chinese company to pay him $1 million, like in U.S., to help promote their Chinese wrestling show on there. And, obviously, that all fell apart. And we all wondered, where would they go now? But it seems like, and I remember us having this conversation, we were talking, and you were saying, like, man, like, what's going to happen with Strong Hearts?
Yep.
T-Hawk and Lindemann need to break away from this guy and all of this. And now it looks like great, and Strong Hearts have never been stronger. And seeing Shingo on the main event of one of their shows. Again, Shima and Shingo, yes, the craziness of all that, yes. But the fact that it's a New Japan guy, a main event player, a former world champion in the main event of your show, that says something out there. Just him selling for those guys is going to mean something.
Absolutely. And you know Shingo Takagi, he will work his butt off to make this match great, and that will tremendously help, especially Ryuichi Kawakami on the other side.
Absolutely. Him and Kazuma, they have to be very happy being in the spot, getting a main match like this. I mean, Kawakami, I mean, like I said, he has to be just laughing his ass off right now, thinking, man, what if I had stayed in Big Japan? You know, where would I be right now? I'd be in the opening match on some...
And we talked about being a tremendous worker. Kazuma, on the other side, he's a tremendous worker as well. He was
underrated in Noah.
Played a big role in Dragon Gate up until earlier this year. Played a role in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Is a mainstay of Great now. That guy has found his place.
He gets around. Shout out to Kazuma. You know, like you said, great talker, like backstage, very good stuff there. But yes, and that's a very interesting match in general. It's going to be, do you think that they're going to like, how do you think they're going to play this in terms of Shima and Shingo? Will they like end up hugging at the end, or will like Shima punch him in the face or something at the end?
I do think they will play up that they team reluctantly because you saw that. The reaction Shima showed was that he was surprised that this match was announced. Mm-hmm. It wasn't him that announced the match. It was, I think the announcers did. I think the ring announcer announced the match for him. So I think they will do that they team reluctantly. There will be some friendly fire, but I think in the end there will be some sort of fist bump or handshake or something like that. And yeah. I do think that Shingo gets the pinfall over Ryuichi Kawakami, which will not be a downfall for Kawakami in any sense, but it will just get him get more eyeballs than him if he gets into the ring with Shingo Takagi.
Absolutely. Like just him being there with Shingo is an automatic win.
Yeah.
Like from where they were. So yeah, there's no problem with that at all. Shingo getting the win. I fully expect that. Shima, he's such a talker. Who knows? Maybe he might be like, no, I think I need to get to pinfall in this match. but yes, I fully expect what you said to happen. And I think it's only good for Kawakami, this match.
Other two matches on this card so far, Hayato Tamura faces a mystery opponent and Michiko Miyagi faces Dash Shisako, dating back to their days together in Sendai Girls. So that is a cool match as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You get a nice little story between the two former Sendai girls, see what they could do with each other. I'm sure it'll be a fine match. I like all of their Joshi matches that they have on the card. None of them are like, you know, anything going super, super insane that we must watch, but I like what they do with them. I think they always have a decent story to tell. And there, Nanai Takahashi was on the last show as well, making her a great debut, which was very good, in fact.
It was, teaming with Ryo Mizunami.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it took on Miyagi and Hosokawa, who are like the great signees there. It's usually Miyagi and Hosokawa and or Hosokawa versus an outsider. They use that formula a lot. Although they've been using Madeline a lot too on there too. on some of their shows. So they've been doing a lot of different things. I like all of their Joshi matches, though. They're always solid matches, always good in that second match position, going in there, doing good things. So that match will be a lot of fun. Who do you think the X is going to be to face Tamura?
I have no idea, actually. It could be anyone.
It could be literally anyone.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Kenta.
Yes.
Only logical choice here.
How hilarious would it be if Noah, if it's someone else for Noah, then Kenta is the X for great.
Yes.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I have an idea. Maybe Zeus.
Maybe it's Zeus. Hey, yeah.
Osaka Pro, baby. Coming through all the places. You want to talk about a worker? Zeus, he is the owner of a company. You don't get to be there is no such thing as an honest promoter in wrestling. And so, Zeus, unfortunately, I have to cast you in that lot now. But I know you can talk your way into this, buddy. Get Zeus into great. That's what I need to see right now. And he would be an awesome addition, let's be real about it.
Absolutely. Would fit very well with the Bulk Orchestra.
They need to hug. I have Zeus be the secret mastermind of a Bulk Orchestra. Have him work Osaka Pro shows on there. I'm all for this. I want Zeus to be the X, damn it. Somewhere.
You talked yourself into a shoot now.
Yes, put him somewhere. I don't care what promotion it is. He has to show up in every promotion. He needs to be like Kazuma. Just go everywhere and pick up people for his train of Osaka Pro that he is driving right now.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to you working yourself into a Zeus shoot now. We'll see how that goes. Final topic for today, Dylan. It is the New Japan Pro Wrestling. We got a bunch of bullet points here on New Japan, of course. First one, last weekend, Windy City Riot. What you think?
You know, Windy City Riot, when I come into these kind of shows, when it comes to Strong, I think Strong is usually a good show. You know, the American problem. But the problem is, nothing feels important on it. You know, at the end of the day. So that's something that I always have trouble with. But you look at the show, the match that impressed me a lot was, you know, and I thought really all the last three matches had something to offer in their own way. Even if I didn't love all of them, I thought seeing the appearance of Umino was something that was very interesting. He faced Jay White. They were doing that US of J challenge, which is a
yeah. I thought that his appearance was interesting, but sadly he had to just work a Jay White formula match.
Yes, that's not good. That's never good. But I will say that Umino himself, I think, does not look great either. I was not too impressed.
Yeah,
with what I saw.
He's clearly, when you look at the hair, he's clearly going for the Tanahashi look. But there needs to be a lot of work done.
Maybe he needs to do the Tanahashi body.
Maybe that would be a good start.
Yeah, so that would be good as well. But like even like someone like Narita, and he was like in a nothing match on this show. But every time I see that guy, I'm like, man, this guy is a great worker. Like he can be something. And, you know, he stands out in every situation. But Umino, I think that there's just a lot missing with him right now. Like, to me, he feels like he had a long way to go. But him going into the show, I think, was interesting, at least. You had Ishii and Suzuki.
Wait a second. What do you mean Renarita was in a meaningless match on this show? This was probably one of my favorite matches of the show, this 10-man tag.
Well, I mean, I'm not arguing that.
Okay.
I just said it's not important.
No, it really wasn't important. But I wanted to just shout out this great 10-man tag match and that dive from JR Kratos.
Oh, great stuff there. JR Kratos, shout out, man. Like I said, this guy just is a huge ball of muscle.
Yes.
And he just, he's kind of awesome. I liked everybody on that.
That match was really good.
Yeah, I liked everybody in that match. Coughlin's another one I think has taken a huge step forward in the last year.
He has this great deal where he has this reputation now that he's able to lift everybody, regardless how big and tall they are.
Yeah, Danny Limelight was in there. We've seen him do some things on there.
Black Tiger?
Who was the Black Tiger?
Ah.
Could it be?
Maybe Rocky Romero can find out one day who it was.
I'm sure that there is no connection between this man and Rocky Romero. None whatsoever. Although he was on the card, teaming with Brother Utes Yes. There. The dark match, though. But yeah, he we saw the last match, presumably. There's been a lot of talk swirling around Juice Robinson, his contract coming up.
I don't know. It just feels like that they've been in this holding pattern for over a year now. But then again, they came up victorious here, teaming with Brody King against TMDK with their partner Bad Dude Tito. So I don't know where this is all leading, but I definitely don't feel that they are necessarily part of New Japan anymore, at least not. When I think about New Japan, I don't think about these guys anymore.
Yeah, it feels like a lot's kind of passed them by, this wrestling scene.
True.
I read a comment or whatever somebody said in some interview where Juice was like, I'm not even excited about wrestling anymore out there, which I believe. I've seen his performances over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
That is there. And that's the problem. I just think motivation is an issue with these guys. Something's gone wrong with all of this. I've long thought that they probably need a fresh start. Somewhere else, but I don't know if that's going to work for someone like Juice at this stage. But always a big fan of Finlay. I think he's a great worker at his core. Juice, I really enjoyed as a babyface at one point. I think he's lost what he had, but hopefully one day they can get it together and do that. Shane Haste working there too.
Now, no dude. Mikey Nichols, by the way.
Yeah, where's Mad Mikey?
Maybe. Doesn't seem like that they will bring him in again.
It's just weird. This whole company is just weird. Like, it's strong at the end of the day. Like, everything about it's weird. Scott Norton was in a match on this show. And you loved it.
I loved it. Yes.
I can tell. It was phenomenal. It was not phenomenal.
It was a meme match.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Empire. They're Bullet Club. Yeah, it was bad.
But let's get to the meat of this show here. Tomohiro Ishii beat Minoru Suzuki in a match that they didn't necessarily do more or anything else than they would do in a Japanese setting. It was more so that the crowd made this match and the crowd let it seem like it was a much bigger deal than it. I'm not taking anything away from these two performers, but realistically, this was about nothing. But the crowd made this and led you to believe that this match was actually a high-profile singles match between these two. So the rating of 9.05, I can see where this is coming from.
To me, I don't like these two in America at all. I'm not a huge Suzuki fan most of the time anyway, but Ishii is like one of the guys in New Japan. But every time I watch him on this American tour, it feels like this is not. There's a hint of it there, because I thought that Ishii in this match, I thought he did a very good job of selling for Suzuki and making his comeback feel important. I thought he worked from underneath really well on Minoru Suzuki. And there's still that flash there, but I think there's something missing that he has in Japan that he doesn't quite have in America in any of his matches.
I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, because just to remember the spot where he reversed the Gotch-style pile driver, he really drew the crowd into firing up for the reversal that he did. So I really thought that he worked the crowd well.
The crowd, the crowd made this match, in my opinion, like I said. But he himself, I think, like I said, I've been watching a lot of his matches. You know, I've been firing up on all of them, but they never quite reach where I want them to overall. But this was a good match. Like you said, I think the crowd made up for whatever deficiencies they would have. I think this is probably one of his best on his American tour so far. And for both of them, really, on their American tour so far. And yeah, it was good. The crowd was the difference of this match. Being a random, regular mid-tier match, and like something that you could see special. But I didn't think it was a 9. I thought it was a good match.
I would go to an 8 for this one.
Yeah, you know, I liked it. Like I said, it maybe a 7, 7.5. To me, it was better than their other matches they've had. But to me, this isn't threatening my match of the month list, even let alone match of the year.
Is John Moxley and Will Ospreay threatening that list?
Now, that was a good match and all too, but to me, the same problems I always have with Ospreay are in all of his matches, I will say. But, you know, it was good.
I do think the blood made the match here.
This is another one where you get around it, the crowd, the blood. I think Moxley is an expert at using blood in his match. Even that match he had with Biff, Bloodsport, was really based around that. So you have that. You had them going into it. I think you had a very natural, like, the crowd connects with Moxley and hates Ospreay. So you have a very, very natural, like, connection, you know, with the match. And I thought they tried really hard going in there. Some stuff with Ospreay I didn't like going on there, but I thought I liked them as opponents. I think they're very natural opponents in terms of their opposites to each other going in there. I do wish that ultimately Ospreay, as a heel, I wish that he would tone down his style in general. And I always am not a big fan of his style anyway. But I think especially as a heel, I wish that he would hold back a little bit and focus more. Remember when he said, oh, I'm not the aerial assassin anymore, I'm the assassin. And that lasted for like a month, and then he went back to being the aerial assassin on there. But like, you're a heavyweight and you're a heel performer now. Why are you doing these big spots all the time, especially against someone like Moxley?
Who, just would say because he can't help himself.
Yeah, and his acting, I am not a big fan of at all. I continue to think his character work is among the worst. But in terms of like a match, moves, they put great effort, both men did. There was drama with the blood, the crowd was into it. They did a lot right. Yeah. It was a good match, but not...
It was a good show, just also from the crowd reactions and from everything surrounding it. I thought this was a big win for Strong. Because as you said, the show is good, but lacks momentum lots of times. And we'll see how the momentum continues for this brand of New Japan. They have a taping coming up. They have two shows coming up on May 14. There is Capital Collision, but they have not announced any matches for that. And then the day thereafter, on the Sunday, they have a Strong taping, and for this Strong taping, they actually have some really cool matches lined up going through the card. Jake Something makes his New Japan debut against Brody King. That should be very cool. Jake Something is someone that I really like as a performer.
Yeah, he's very good.
QT Marshall, who is absolutely entertaining. I love QT. He faces Carl Fredericks, coming off Windy City Riot, of course. David Finlay faces Danny Limelight. Then Killer Cross comes in and faces Yuya Uemura. Yikes.
Love it. I hope that somehow Suzuki runs in and slaps Killer Cross.
Yes. Did you see this video that he made when he was out of WWE? How corny was that?
Everything he does is kind of corny. Go back and listen to some of our old Lucha Talk shows when he was in AAA, and we said the same thing. Like, he's very, like, just goofy. when he tries to act how he is, yes.
Not goofy is the next match, the six-man tag. DKC, Kevin Knight, and Alex Covlin, representing the LA Dojo, face Team Filthy with Jay Kratos, Joel Nelson, and Royce Isaacs. I want to say the West Coast Wrecking Crew, Nelson and Isaacs, they are a great tag team. Really enjoy their matches. And the two top matches on this taping are Chris Dickinson versus Hiroshi Tanahashi and Minoru Suzuki versus Tony Deppen.
Okay.
That was not the reaction I was waiting for. Don't you like Tony Deppen? I like Tony Deppen.
I wouldn't. Nobody's going to accuse him of making the smartest decisions on social media.
Well, yes.
but Suzuki is not. And I haven't liked his run at all in America. So it's nothing against him. I'm not interested in Suzuki. Tanahashi match will be good, I think.
All right. That is New Japan Strong.
Wait a minute. One thing I want to say about this.
I'm sorry.
Where the hell was Okada? Like, we talked about him on the Corkin show, and he wasn't here. He was still in Japan. What's going on? Why wasn't he on that show?
That is, I don't know.
That's a very
he was on
the Japanese shows after the Corkin show. He just had a match yesterday.
He did with everybody. I don't know what we missed there. I don't know.
Yeah, what a weird like situation that is. I that's what I want to know. We got all these reports going around. Give me reports about this. Why isn't Okada on the Corkin show? Is he too big for Corkin now in the tribute show?
Really weird.
Yeah, just totally. Because we all thought, we both thought, yeah, that he would be on this Windy City show.
But yeah, exactly. We just for the time frame, we were thinking that Okada wouldn't be on the Korakuen's 60th anniversary on April 16 because he was going to be on Windy City Ride, but he wasn't. So, yeah.
And they went out of their way not to have him on the show. They had a man get injured in your main event, and still Okada.
They replaced him with Taichi. Yeah.
Yeah, they said, Okada or Taichi? Let's go with Taichi. They're like, Okada, you sent this one out. What? What was that? Just a strange situation.
Really strange, yeah. Yes. Oh, what a weird situation. But Dylan, I know a show that Okada will probably part of unless he has something else to do and they think
he's too busy for these wrestling
too
shows.
Too busy for this big show from Chicago. They announced that AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling will team up to run a show named Forbidden Door. What a stupid name for a show where you, on your big TV show, say, we are partnering with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and they are still naming this the Forbidden Door. I just can't anymore.
I love it, because it's so stupid.
It is, actually, yes, you're true. Yes.
That it's going to annoy everyone, yes, including myself.
You saw it live here.
Yes, it's so annoying to everyone, including me, because you're completely right. Like, you are completely right. It's so stupid that I have to respect it on like a worker level. Like, why would you do this other than like Tony Khan another Tony Khan moment right now, which we've seen a lot of those lately as well. Speaking of online decision makers, we're seeing yet another one from him. And how about that segment announcing it to his acting on Jay White when he came out?
This acting was one of the problems that I have with AEW these days. Everything is all over the place. All the acting is bad. Last week's Dynamite was the absolute top of the iceberg right now with all the acting. All the backstage segments were incredibly corny and bad. The wrestling was mostly good. But also here, Obari. They brought him on stage to do nothing.
No, he literally just stood there next to Tony Khan.
And he looked offended by what Jay White and Adam Cole did.
I mean, of course. Yeah, Adam Cole popping up. Adam Cole was the one who announced this too, by the way. He cut off Tony Khan.
Sure, but the reason that he did was that he had to announce that he was in a Owen Hart qualifying match with Ishii.
Of all the people to put
on Rampage, yes.
Like, why? Why would you do that? That is a troll on me, Tony Khan has put together, because he knows that I hate Adam Cole and don't want to watch him wrestle Ishii. And
now you have to.
Yeah, so now I have to. Like, on my idol, like my favorite wrestler, Owen Hart, his tradition. I will give AEW credit. They did a great job with Owen's theme song, by the way, coming back to his high energy. Yes. They did a great job on the tournament as well, obviously honoring Owen. But still, Adam Cole versus Ishii, out of all the people, there are so many people you could have put Ishii with. That would have been either great or at least like something like Samoa Joe might not have been a great match, but it would have been fun and it would have been awesome to see. I want to see that. I want to see where's my Joe and Ishii. Like, instead, they give us Cole.
Yeah, I would have seen like basically everybody from this AEW roster against Cole. Against Ishii, then Cole.
Yeah, I completely agree with that statement that you just made. But unfortunately, Tony Khan hates me, so he has booked this match instead.
Maybe you shouldn't be so mean on Twitter, Dylan.
I'm not mean to Tony Khan. I've respected his...
Who knows how many burner accounts you have?
Burner accounts? Yeah. What are you talking about? Robots?
Yes, the robots, exactly. No, seriously here. This show, Forbidden Door, this will be a huge show. And, of course, people have been posting dream matches all day on Twitter after they made the announcement on Dynamite. I want to say a few things here. This will probably not be a case of this NOAH New Japan Wrestle Kingdom show we saw in January, because there is no domestic competition between AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling. It is not a competition. It is a seemingly very strong working relationship, because now we also have AEW content on New Japan World for the Japanese subscribers, with Japanese pro wrestlers doing commentary for Dynamite. So they are working together. So that is one point. The second point is the heavyweights for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yes, they will do Wrestling Dontaku in May. They will do some other shows around that time as well. But for most of May, the heavyweights are off, because it is the Best of the Super Junior, and the junior heavyweights take center stage during that time. Then, of course, they will have Dominion before the Forbidden Door show. But at the end of June, that is really mostly a time in the schedule for New Japan Pro Wrestling where they don't have any big shows. So I would expect the core New Japan roster and the big stars to be over for that show. And Dylan, what do you expect?
It just feels like, to me, this kind of show, I think they'll try to have one big match on it, just to hook people, so to speak. And that could manifest in many different ways. Like, it could be a singles match. It could be some kind of Bullet Club deal that they have in mind. You know, I'm sure they'll want to lean into that pretty heavily, just because the start of the company, really relies on the Elite and all that stuff that they would probably want to do there. You know, we talked about Ibushi earlier. You know, him mm-hmm. and Omega have both been out for a while, so that seems like a match that would garner a lot of attention if they wanted. So they have a lot of different options to play with going in there. Yeah. But I do think they'll have one big match and a lot of, like, multi-man tags, pretty much.
I also think that there will be multi-man tags, because you have two companies, and each company will probably try to get as many of their wrestlers onto the card. I can see them doing one of their battle royals as well. There you could get like 20 people on the card.
They did that with that Ring of Honor show.
They did.
Madison Square Garden, yeah.
So that's what I could see. I could see some title matches. I'm just throwing something out. Like, for example, if Taguchi and Wato are still the junior tag champions, they could, for example, face Top Flight. Just something from the top of my head.
Yeah, baby, fly Wato over. That's what we want to see.
Yes. They could do a six-man tag deal. They could put an AEW title on the line, the television title, for example, they could put on the line. And I was also looking at the Golden Lovers reuniting in a tag team match then. And I can see them doing much like they did on with Windy City Riot, two or three big singles matches, I could see. And that could also be singles matches that could lead up to the G1 climax. Maybe they do G1 qualifying matches on that card as well. That's
a great idea to try, like, maybe have some kind of tournament to have someone at AEW be in the G1 that they can air and run the finals of on that show.
They could do that, for example. And it only makes sense to promote the G1 for this card with New Japan coming in. And we all presume that there will be a AEW participation in this year's G1 Climax. So all of that, the timing of that, completely makes sense.
Yeah, I think it all makes sense, pretty much. You know, it's nice that New Japan's getting a little bit of love in America. Again, I think this is going to definitely help their brand. I think it actually does more for them than AEW, personally, this Forbidden Door show that they have there. I think that'll give them the chance to get some of their guys on a mainstream stage in America, get the brand going up again. And AEW, they get some fresh matches, some new people, and something for their fans that I think they'll really appreciate. So again, I think they will lean heavily into something like that, whether it's the Golden Lovers or the Elite. I think they will do something to satisfy that, some big matches. Like you said, maybe a big singles match here or there. I do expect a lot of tags, though. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see what Tony Khan has. Because he's, this isn't like, oh, Japanese you know, co-promoted show. This is Tony Khan working with the Japanese company. And that's a little bit of a wild card.
Yes.
Going forward, I would say.
And that will be very interesting how Tony Khan works with this, with these New Japan executives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch it and interesting to see how it all plays out.
This will probably be a pay-per-view with a four-hour time frame with maybe an additional 1 hour before that on YouTube, so you have 5 hours. There will definitely not be 16 singles matches on that card because they would want to have the singles matches go long. So yes, the multi-mans will be there. And we talked about time frame. This will also be a time frame where one Kushida could make another appearance in the United States for another company that's not WWE now.
Yeah, he's gone from there, is what we've heard. It seems like a natural fit, honestly, you would see there. He obviously has a little bit of a run when it comes to his American run on NXT and things like that. I think almost certainly he will be back in New Japan very soon, like probably even before that show happens, the Forbidden Door. And
yeah, Dominion probably.
Yeah, I could see that going in there. I mean, the way that the way that it's formulated, or I guess said, we don't know. It's not like I have his contract in front of me that I can read this, obviously. But the way it's stated, it's like, look, his contract's over.
Yep.
There's no release. Like, he could go, he could show up tomorrow somewhere.
It makes sense. He went to WWE in 2019, and they usually do 3-year contracts, so that would add up.
Yeah. So, like, there's no, like, he has to wait. Like, he could show up tomorrow somewhere if he wanted. But, you know, we have the Best of Super Juniors coming up. I think everybody would point to that right there. They need some new talent. I could very well see him involved in that as well. A lot of the reports are that he would probably want to do something a little different than he did last time. Which
hopefully,
is
because he's basically done everything in the junior scene.
Yeah, you know, it feels like, I mean, like I said, at the end of the day, what's his ceiling in New Japan?
Never title.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fun. Like I said, you know, he's a great talent. I love him as a wrestler. I think that in that company, we saw where they valued him at last time. Mm-hmm. To be fair, that like his send-off was noteworthy, him teaming with Tanahashi at the end of the day. They did him right on his send-off when he left the company. I thought they did a great job with that. But, you know, ultimately, like you said, him coming back to the junior division doesn't really do a lot for me just because we've seen it so much there. He'll have a few new opponents, you could say there. But to me, he'll be a filler guy in that Best of the Super Juniors, and maybe we'll see something different. Maybe even on this show that we're talking about, this Forbidden Door on there. But I wonder if they don't have some kind of heel deal in mind for him. Just something different. I think the time splitters, all that stuff, that needs to go away, in my opinion. I think that all needs to go.
I mean, they could do a one-off where they team once again, but it's not like that the time splitters is a tag team.
Never mind. They don't even use Shelly. I'm just saying more like his, you know, the Marty McFly.
That time splitter deal, yes.
Yeah, like get rid of all that.
I was just
going to
say, it could, I don't think it will be a regular tag team anymore, but for just nostalgic reasons, it would be cool to see once or twice.
And yes, I love them both as wrestlers, but just in general, the main thing is this all needs to go. Like the Back to the Future, the Marty McFly, like that all needs to go. Like everything needs to change. Like, he needs to do something different, and, you know, and then he'll be much more interesting that way than if he just comes back as, oh, it's Kushida again. Like, you know, and, like, he's back wrestling a lot of these same, like, oh, it's him and Desperado, him and Hiromu. Like, we've seen these matches many times.
I have a great idea, Dylan.
What?
He could join the House of Torture.
Well, I mean, that's about the worst heel turn you can have. But that's the problem, is, like, a heel turn in New Japan means
exactly.
You're going to tank. You know, pretty much. So I hope, I guess I would rather him just do something different and not be a heel than that there. But like, would they really push him as a heavyweight on there?
I can't see that.
I mean, they had their chance last time. He was there and chose not to. Maybe there's different minds in there now. Maybe somebody will get in somebody's ear and be like, hey, look, we have something with this guy. Maybe he'll be somebody that they just want to put on strong and have big matches. But
sure.
I do think that he'll come back to Japan.
Everything stands and falls what he personally wants, because we've set it up with Shinsuke Nakamura back then. One of his main deals was he wanted to live in America.
Right.
What does Kushida want? Does he want to live in America, or is he just there to be in a wrestling promotion? That's what we'll have to find out.
It doesn't feel like that with him, but who knows how these last few years have gone as well. Maybe he likes living here.
Maybe.
That's something that nobody can know outside of him. You know, like, he's the only one that can answer that. You know, I was reading something that said that he didn't feel like, you know, he was skeptical he could ever really do anything in WWE or be a big star. Everything I see about him, his mindset is very like, this seems like a guy who has his head on right at the end of the day. This isn't some crazy person or anything like that. This seems like a very down-to-earth person who recognizes himself, his own talent, and his value. And how will he do that? Because if he goes back to New Japan, he's back in the juniors again. He's either going to be very – he's going to feel – I bet, and I don't know this for sure, but I bet he probably felt that it was time to go when he left. You know, very stale type of situation he was in. We all knew that, but I'm sure he felt it too.
Yeah.
He's either going to go to that or, like you said, a house of torture, which – will that make anyone happy? You know what would be great with Kushida? Have him wrestle on Great.
Yeah.
He could do that style.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he'd be a great person to do some kind of, you know, that be kind of like a conductor, because he's like right in between, you know, in every way, kind of like a pro wrestling and a, you know, shoot stylist. He's got junior and heavyweight. He could kind of go in between a lot of different ways. So I think he's a great person if that would be a good plan for him.
Could be a way to go. We'll see. But definitely New Japan sounds like the most logic opportunity right now for him. Mm-hmm. And I just got one more thing on this show, Dylan, actually, because it was announced also for the juniors. They are doing, in Japan, they are doing a big story with Yo, the main eventing shows with Okada. And on the last show they did, Yo pinned Hiromu Takahashi with his direct drive. And now they added Yo versus Hiromu Takahashi in a singles match to the Dominion card on the second position of that card, right before the Best of the Super Junior. I thought that was interesting that they went out to promote that match and then have it added to the card that they had already announced and changed the card around a bit. That shows that they are behind Yo now.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like he got a big storyline in last year's Best of the Super Juniors, where he ended up making a big comeback. He lost his first few matches and made the big comeback near the end, you know. And I think, didn't he make the finals of last year's tournament? And yeah, see, that's a rematch of that, Hiromu and Yo. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it seems like they're going to give him another go at it this go-round. I thought the story they told with him, you know, he to me, it's not that I dislike him per se. It's just he's very bland, in my opinion, and not a standout performer. But I thought that they did a great job of getting the most out of him last year and the Best of the Super Juniors. I know I might have been the only one that watched it on there. Yes. Oh, good.
You watched the Best.
Oh, the final. I'm talking about the whole tournament.
No.
Like, you know, the whole tournament was a great – like, they did a great job getting the most out of it. The main event wasn't that good because you had show interfere or the final. But the story they told was really good with him. So if they could get something else off the ground with this, I'm behind it. And hopefully they have success with him. And whatever this is with Hiromu, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. You have Akira coming in, too. They already talked about that. Mm-hmm. You know, he should be there. Maybe Kushida. Maybe they'll have some AEW guy. We don't know that yet. We're probably going to be
doing a very interesting tournament this time around.
Yeah, do we know when they're going to announce the field?
I would assume that they announce it on Dominion or
Dontaku.
Yeah, Dontaku. I'm sorry. Yes, Dontaku.
Yeah. They're going to announce it after the tournament ends.
Or maybe at the end of this tour. But no, Dominion, I was just going to say Dominion again. Dontaku sounds more like it.
Yeah, and this makes sense. Like, just do this match and then announce the brackets. You know, it feels like it makes perfect sense. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. But, yeah, should be a fun field this year. Back to its normal time. I think that's going to be fun to watch.
Absolutely. So this brings us to the end of this episode. I thought we, once again, brought a lot of topics up on our plate here. I enjoyed this very much once again, Dylan. So great to be back on track here with all the current wrestling that is happening.
Absolutely. We've got some big shows coming up, too. The two NOAH shows we talked about. Hopefully they can really overachieve, give us something spectacular to talk about. Stardom has a big show at the end of the month, too. They set up a red belt title into the Cinderella tournament there. That's going to be a big show going forward. And Champion Carnival starting back up again, probably by the time this drops. Well, it'll air after, probably, like you said, not live. But still, Champion Carnival going to finish up. Next go-around, we'll have a lot to talk about, too. So modern wrestling, especially in Japan, crazy world. It never sleeps, but always a lot of fun to go over with, especially with you, men. I really appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully we all have fun listening to it, too, all the listeners out there.
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate your time as well, Dylan. It was great to go over all these companies with you once again, and we'll see when we get to do this next time. I've said it to you in private. The next couple of weeks will be very stressful at my workplace due to the final exams coming up. And I will be heavily involved with that, so we'll have to see when I get to do this again with you. But for this time, it was a blast, and I hope all the listeners enjoyed it as well. This has been the Eastern Lariat for now. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.